It looks like the media has just completely moved on from the Trump shooting, but we haven't. And as well, we have a new video to analyze. Well, it's a new old video, but man, much better quality. Hello, everyone. Dr. Chris Martinson here with a citizen's investigation on the Trump shooting. Let's go here. We have this deafening silence, and we have to talk about this new video that just came down, or at least it's a higher res version of a video we've been looking at, but it confirms a lot of what we were thinking. Hey, let's start here. Wall Street Journal, front page, nothing about the Trump assassination. They've just moved on. Here we are, what, 3 weeks later and got nothing. So apparently this is just in the rearview mirror. Now, hypothesis, if this had been somebody else, like on the Democratic side or somebody from who is approved of by the power structures that are out there, this would not be in the rearview mirror. There would be, I've seen zero articles about how this impacted him or what he thought or what his children thought or what his advisors think, or where are the interviews with the victims, right? David Dutch and James Copenhaver, who survived, got shot. Were they shot once, twice? Where were they shot? How are they doing? What's going on? There's just no interest. No interest here. Nothing on the front pages of Bloomberg, except Les is talking about Trump in the context of the latest Harris selection of Waltz to be her running mate. I'll have more on that for my subscribers in a second part of this. And of course, nothing in the New York Times, except they're going to perseverate about Donald Trump and how he's slandering liberals or whatever. Obviously, that's the angle they're going to take on that. Even my Twitter feed has moved on. I'm about as focused on this as possible, and this is what the algo has decided I really needed to look at today. Not sure why this is happening. Now, listen, the last update from the FBI, we can update their lack of updates here in this update, 22 days ago, July 15th, that was their last update at 3:05 p.m. Let me get my tool out here. Yeah, that's it. That's it. And they say nothing. They say technical specialist successfully gained access to his phone. They searched the subject's resident and vehicle are complete. But what vehicle is that? Was it that his car, which was a Nissan Sonata, I believe, or was it a Sentra? I forget. But or was it the white van? We don't know. And what they're really referring to here. And they say they've conducted nearly 100 interviews of law enforcement personnel, event attendees, other witnesses. That work continues. Of course, we're all interested to know what happened to those three ESU snipers that were supposed to be in that Overwatch room. Nope. Oh, it was two because one went home. Oh, wait. One went to go look for crooks. Oh, wait. The other one, for reasons that are as yet still unclear, maybe went downstairs to let the other guy in, went downstairs for other reasons. Anyway, abandoned post literally the same minute that crooks finally gained access to the roof. Miraculous timing on that. Of course, we would like to know more about that. And they say that victim services personnel have offered assistance to the victims of Saturday's incident. Okay, look, brings to mind this Solzhenitsyn quote, right? We know they're lying. They know they're lying. They know that we know that they're lying. And we know that they know that we know that they're lying, and still they continue to lie. That's just how it feels about this whole thing. Look, we all know how this is going to go, right? They're going to just stonewall this investigation. They're going to slow roll it. They're not going to give us any information. And then later on, they're going to release this big report, and we're all going to be going, dude, how did you miss all this key evidence that we here in the citizens investigation did manage to bring forward? And by the way, all of this lying, everything about this, the big media not covering this, you know what's happening here, right? This is the deep state machinery doing what it does to make sure that you are looking at this, but not that. They don't want us looking at this Trump assassination attempt. They don't want us digging too deeply into it. There's a lot of things they don't want us looking at, which is why my scouting report for subscribers, if you're watching this out on YouTube or Rumble or some other place or Twitter, for my subscribers, come on back, because today we got to talk about that topic down there, which I'm not even going to read out for, well, because we know about how the censors work here out in the land of the free, home of the brave, right? So Jesse Waters from Fox has been on the job, and noting here that Josh Hawley, out of Missouri, senator, and says Secret Service whistleblowers tell him that the lead agent on the Trump-Butler job was not enforcing the normal security protocols that day. And she, we know who that was, right? That is, it's, we pointed that out the other day. That is the woman who had trouble getting her gun in her holster, so just kept pointing it around. She was the lead agent, apparently, that day. So didn't follow or enforce normal security protocols, wasn't having IDs checked that day. They'd even allowed people to assemble all around the AGR building who went through no magnetometers, no ticketing process. And the ticketing process, by the way, allows you to do some pre-checks on people, right? He describes it, this whistleblower, as a free-for-all and says, as we speak, this lead agent is still on the duties, doing all the duties of her job. You never leave the person who screwed up royally in a position where they can influence the investigation, right? It's like, hey, our company got embezzled from, we're going to leave the accountant in charge because it's just easier that way, right? This is not how it's done. So this smells, it does not smell good. It smells badly. By the way, we are rolling along over at Peak Prosperity on our citizens investigation. Thank you for everybody who's been in here just dropping. Look, we have hundreds and hundreds of comments here. People doing amazing audio work, site reconstruction work. We got other forensics. Who's involved? People are putting up just amazing, amazing analysis, research, and thinking. This is what it should look like. If you want a breath of fresh air, come to Peak Prosperity. This is just free. Just follow that. The 357, no, that wasn't it. It's not a gun reference. It turns out this is the 357th area of investigation that's been opened in our forums up to this point. Just a lucky number alignment there. Pew, 357. Anyway, if you want to come and have reasonable conversation where you're talking with people who can still reason and think, this is where it's happening. Okay. Now, remember, I put this up in yesterday's piece. This is from Source 4. We're saying this is from the side of the AGR Building 6. Over on the side, somebody was filming there, and they did rotate their camera around pretty hard, and people said, well, that's why shots 1 through 3 sound so different. They sound muffled. By the way, that was a really poor quality video. All true. However, as I noted yesterday, there are these echoes that you can clearly see here in shots 1, 2, and 3. This one's a little faint on shot 1, but here you can see them very clearly in shots 2 and 3, so we're able to say with an average of about 0.08 seconds from shot to echo. But over here, the echoes are a full twice as far away at 0.17, right? Here we see on shot 8, very clear echo signature. You can see them up here. This is the echo. That's the shot. That's the echo. The echo is very strong. It really stands right out. Wow, that's a strong echo there. And we notice a number of things, which is that these have a lower register. So this is a frequency sonogram. These are higher frequencies going up this way, lower frequencies as we head to the bottom. These first three just have a distinctly lower frequency than these next five over here. Now, you could hear that. Now, I understand. People said, well, that looks like it was shot with a potato, not a cell cam, you know, cell phone, video cam. You're absolutely right. Looks like complete potato land. You got me. However, just this morning, just yesterday, it turned out that Piper Grimley on YouTube dropped the high res version of this. So it's like, what's happening? This looks a lot better. I like this. So now we can start to see people. And by the way, I did everything I could to dig through to see if I could find the other agents, the undercover agents. I'm not sure. I don't think this is Capri guy. I don't think so. But I couldn't find ZZ Top in here. And I couldn't find the other guy with the backward baseball cap with a white patch on it and the T-shirt with very distinctive logo and lettering and stuff on it. So I couldn't find that. But here's what we can see. So this is just, all I'm doing here is we're just going to play. This is just the shots. This is a minute and a half video, minute and 26 seconds. I've just pulled out these 16 seconds here, which is about the shot, so we can see them now. We'll hear them again. And again, shots 1 through 3 and 5, 6, 7, 8 sound very different. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then shot 9 is very different. Shot 9, of course, is that first counter sniper or counter force law enforcement shot back that stopped the shooting up on the roof, wherever that was actually coming from. So let's listen in. Okay, again, now we can start to count people. And by the way, I'm going to reiterate this one point, which is that allegedly we have those three counter snipers, then two, then one, then none, because they had to go look for crooks. Now, we know from the Dave Stewart film that when he came around the side, there were 14 separate law enforcement over there, three of which were undercovers that are over here. They come from this side somewhere. We don't know where. I can't find them in the audience here, but maybe I've just missed them so far. And so we have at least before those other snipers left the room, you know, if we add it up properly and subtract two from that story, there's at least a dozen officers down here that we know about. And for some reason, those dozen officers couldn't somehow be responsible for finding crooks within this sea of a couple dozen people. I said 180 to 100 the other day, but I mean, you really add it up. That's being generous. 100 is being generous to their side of the story. Honestly, it's a few dozen people. So as you watch this, I mean, start here. Put this back. There, this is, you look at this, get my drawing tool back, my laser pointer. There's just not that many people. I mean, if you said to a single officer, hey, we're looking for a young guy, about 20, he's got glasses, he's got shorts on, he's got dark or black sneakers, and he's got a gray Demolition Ranch t-shirt, you could go, nope, 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 nope. I mean, this isn't even hard. I mean, this is easy. So I'm not clear why those two snipers are sticking to the story that they had to leave their posts because nobody else could find this guy they were that worried about. But how hard could this be? Honestly, that story just doesn't hang. We still have questions, too, about who that officer was that allegedly either was boosted up or pulled themselves up or climbed up. We don't know what. Had the rifle pointed at them by crooks, they said, and then they dropped down, and then it was either seconds or 30 seconds or some indeterminate amount of time later, the firing began. And we had other questions, which is like, well, why didn't you just like climb back up and shoot over the top of your head or fire a couple into the ground to get the party started? There's something very wrong with that story, too. And the way we judge wrong is the story shifts, it's incomplete, and we don't have names for these other people yet. So we know that one of those two ESU counter sniper people that was up in that Overwatch room who left their post, we know one of them was named Greg Nickel. Who's the other one? We should know this by now as well. The name of the person who took shot 9. In fact, we should probably know the exact type of the gun, every piece of kit that was on the gun that they said was used, whether or not it had been fired recently, whether or not the recovered brass matched it in terms of case markings from the ejector process and or the firing pin strike, all are consistent, yada, yada. We should know all of these things. We should know the trajectories of the bullets. We should know exactly how many times each of the victims was hit and where on their bodies. There ought to be drawings. We ought to have a full mock-up of where these shots might have come from. We ought to have access to the complete crime scene still with all the stands still stood up so that we can recreate to our heart's content what actually happened. But they dismantled it in record time. Like, gone. That always is the thing that sets my spidey senses off. Because remember, I don't know what the truth is, but man, my BS detector is honed. There's some BS going on here. This is not how these things are conducted, yet they are. So we're supposed to make sense of them. Now, I know what you're asking, though. Chris, now that you actually have a super high res or a much, much higher res version of this particular really, really important video, does that change anything in the audio analysis? And the answer is nothing changes. Here we are. This is the audio pulled from that. You can see here, this now reads at the top, source 4, much higher quality. So we pulled this down, and here we can see this is just the audio file up top where you can see the amplitude of the audio as it's going across, and this is the sonogram with the actual frequencies stacked up with really low frequencies way down here on the left. That's 10 hertz, 100 hertz, really low. And then way up here, higher and higher frequencies. So this is stretching out the frequencies along an X or a time axis. And this is stretching out the amplitude or the loudness across a time axis. What's interesting here is you can see these are the 5 shots. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You can clearly see the echoes in here. They are loud enough at this point where that echo just jumps right out. These echoes in here are stomped on by the shots coming so fast there wasn't time. The shots are actually stacked right on top of the echo. But for number 8, you can see the echo again very clearly. And here's what it looks like. There's shot 4 out of the overall sequence with 1, 2, 3 back here. And then this is shot 4. There's the echo. Here's shot 8. There's the echo. Clean as day. can see it very clearly, but we still notice some of the basic differences. Look at all the high frequencies up here. See how bright it is up here, particularly in this zone right here? Very high. Not as high over here. Shots 1 through 3 are different, but we could say, okay, Chris, you know, the camera's moving. Maybe that person had their thumb over the microphone. It's possible during those first 3 shots, it muffles them. Totally get it. I'm open to that. What I'm not open to, though, again, to reiterate, is this idea that the echoes are going to change. Whether your thumb's on the microphone or it's pointed any one of 360-degree directions, it won't change the echo. The echo is the shot, the loud report, and it bounces off of something and comes back. That won't change depending on where the microphone is pointing. And so here we clearly see, again, on this much, much higher res version of the video, that the audio is the same. We still have these very, very rapid echoes over here for shots 1, 2, and 3. We can actually see the echo on shot 1 just a little better on this one, so it all lines up. And over here, we do not have little tiny short 0.08 second echoes. We have these much larger 0.17, 0.16 to 0.17 echoes. So it's just totally different. And that's not going to change because, you know, the gun's pointed slightly different. Here's something else we know. All 8 of these shots went down, started over on this end of things, on the north part at the AGR buildings, and they went towards Trump, the crowd, and the mic, because we have them down there on Trump's mic, that stationary mic, all those snicks of the bullet, we hear them. They come over in the reports. We can account for all of them. So this gun, these guns, wherever they were, these guns are all pointed that direction. So it can't be that the guns were firing in different directions, therefore bouncing off of different surfaces. For all those bullets, shots 1, 2, and 3, one of them snicked Trump's ear, and one of those hit David Dutch. I'm pretty sure the third one in that series hit Copenhaver, but not entirely 100% positive about that. And then we know 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, number 6 in that series overall, the middle one of that string of 5, that was the one that hit Corey Comparatore. So, or Torre, Comparatore, probably that. At any rate, we know that the gun was pointed that way, so it can't be that the gun was pointed in a vastly different direction. So the only thing that's really left in this is to say, well, you know, there's only about 2.8 seconds in between shot 3 and here. Maybe Crooks was back from the ridge, and the gun is blasting. Some of that blast is going right into that ridge cap. He's, you know, the gun barrel's just barely over the ridge, but it's back. And then it's like, oh, no. So maybe he scooched forward, push that gun barrel over the front of that ridge cap, and maybe that changed something enough, but I'm still struggling with these echoes. All I'm going to say at this point is the echoes must be explained. Can't just walk past them. Can't just pretend they're not there. This is something that absolutely has to be accounted for. Now, the problem I've had with the two-shooter theory, of course, is where do you put the second shooter? And we noted with the excellent work of D-Monk on our site, having rebuilt the entire scene in CAD, that there is a second spot. There's a possibility for a second shooter to sit behind this, well, facade that we would hear on the front of Building 6 on the parking lot side. They could have been here with using the top as a rest. And by the way, fascinating, if they're in this position, they are completely out of sight of both Hercules 2 and Hercules 1, the Secret Service sniper teams that are on the red buildings, barns down near Trump. Trees in the way. Just can't see. Fascinating that that's the case. And so, as I presented yesterday, this is like about 40 feet of difference here from Roger Knight, again, part of our citizens investigation, noting that, yeah, it's about 43 feet here between this little parapet area and Crooks. Now, this, we're analyzing the sound now to see, can this account for some of the differences we're hearing? Obviously, a gun fired from over here and one fired from over here could have very, very different audio characteristics. We're not sure. There is one more possibility from somebody who wishes to remain anonymous from the citizens investigation said, well, you know, if this is the AGR Building 6, there's always the possibility that somebody could be shooting above the windows, which we determined are closed. But maybe there was a way to shoot out of this opening here. Now, this is intriguing because what the sound analysis we've done so far, the fact that shots 1 through 3 are more muffled, particularly to people on the side, not as much to the people on front, and that there's a different audio characteristic to them, whether you're on the side or the front, much more pronounced on the side. those different audio characteristics line up really well with somebody shooting from within an enclosed space, or a room, as we might say. So just putting that there. So we're trying to find a place to put a second shooter, and it's a bit of a challenge, bit of a force fit. Here's one possibility, though, just to consider, and maybe, you know, just put it out there, and maybe it gets rejected. So the advantages of the above the ceiling hypothesis here is that, quote, shooting above the ceiling would contain traces of gunpowder above the ceiling, especially if the shooter was enclosed in some way, was used, it could be removed later. The shooter could hide for hours after the event, could just hang out there. The shooter would be concealed if there was a sweep of the building by local law enforcement, which there probably wasn't, because everybody was told the shooter is down. We got him. He's dead. They knew that well enough to stand Trump up on the stage, not hustle him off the back, roll him off the back of the stage, and then drag him out by the armpits. They stood him up so he could give his iconic photo there. It's very bizarre. How did they know there was only one shooter? That still bothers the heck out of me. It doesn't make any sense to me. But here we see that, if they were convinced, oh, we got the shooter, we got the shooter, there he is, he's dead, his head's like ripped open, there he is, then nobody's really probably going to be doing a full sweep of the building. I think this would be a very safe spot to be in, because everybody knew something, that they were assuming that there was only one shooter. How they assumed that, I don't know. It's totally bizarre. Remember, I was also bothered by the fact that all these undercover guys came running around the side of Building 6 after the shooting, and they were clearing the windows as they came by, you know, but they just ran up. They didn't run up to all these other officers who in theory don't know if there's a second shooter. So you got these undercover guys just wheeling up, you know, in backward baseball hats with guns, and they don't have their badges held in a hand. They just wheel right on up, confident that everybody out there is going to know exactly who they are. It's because everybody knows there's one shooter and they're dead. I don't know how they knew that so quickly. That doesn't still, again, my BS detector is like, that needs digging into. Just like we need to dig into who was that officer, names, who pulled themselves up and came down. Who is that, the same officer as the one who hurt their ankle? Because I'm not clear on that anymore. And exactly when and why did those snipers guys leave from the Overwatch building? And why did they say that they had almost no view of that upper roof? We know they had a perfect view. There these inconsistencies in the stories need to be dug into, because there's something wrong there as presented so far. Full stop. At any rate, saying here, so yes, a sweep of the building, they would be concealed from that. And the above ceiling location would make the bullet trajectory above the head height of people on the ground outside. So all those people up against the fence, you'd be above them. That's fine. And the trajectory is less than 6 feet below and in line with Crooks. So I think you start to clear the stands. That north stand is kind of in the way for if you're just at the window, but maybe here. So we'll rerun this in the CAD program to see what this firing solution gives us. You know, who knows? And this location also solves the differing audio echo problem. Okay, so it's possible. And as we noted, you know, from the Dave Stewart video, we can see there are all these little venti things here. And it's always possible that one of those flipped open and went pow, 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 and flipped closed again. Don't know. We're going to have to start looking into that. So now we're going to turn to the scouting report for all of my subscribers. Can we avoid one of those things I just wrote about there? That's what we're going to have to talk about today, because it's getting pretty serious. All right. Thanks, everybody else, for listening. And I hope you got something from this. Please join the citizens investigation. Thank you for sending in. We're getting more pictures all the time. We're getting more video. This is great. Keep it coming, everybody. Thank you. We'll figure this out. Bye for now.